Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer for Northwestern Medicine. This is sponsored by Northwestern, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Good morning, Doc. How you doing on this Monday?
Pretty good, Bob. A little concerned about the snow coming here, but
yeah, well,
nice today.
Tomorrow we'll be concerned. Today, here's what I'm concerned about. Three health reports, studies in the news last week, and I wanted to sort of get a little deeper into each one because, you know, you get these headlines on the news and then it confuses you more than anything else. The first one, the headline was German experts say eating a full English breakfast could lead to weight loss. And this basically said, you know, get up and right away have a huge breakfast. And this is sort of flying in the face of some studies recently that have talked about fasting and, you know, the old school thinking of big breakfast is not what you should do anymore. So what's the latest on this, Doc?
Yeah, it's really interesting. We have the two extremes that are the most popular right now. We have the intermittent fasting, which you're hearing over and over and over again. And then you hear about this one saying, hey, you know, breakfast still is the most important meal, and have a big breakfast and really make sure that that's your biggest meal of the day, because if you take in those calories, you'll burn them through the day, you'll have decreased snacking. And really, it comes down to personal preference. The study that came out of Germany that you're talking about, when we look at how much energy we need every day, it's made up of three things. It's made up of how much energy we just need to survive, just at a very basic level. And then how much energy do we need if we're going to exercise? And then the third portion, which is usually very small, is how much energy do we need to digest and absorb the meal that we eat? This study is saying we can change that from, instead of being just 10%, we could change that to 15 or 20%, and if we do, you're going to lose weight.
So are you a proponent of get up and have a big breakfast right away?
No, I'm not. I'm a big proponent of the intermittent fasting, to be honest with you. But so, again, this one looks at what we call diet-induced thermogenesis, and it says, okay, how much energy is it going to take us? How much energy can we burn just to absorb the food that we're taking in? Then those calories are available for us later in the day. Do you remember, Bob, when you were growing up and you had a big meal and your parents would say, hey, you can't go swimming for 30 minutes.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Remember that?
Uh-huh.
Exactly. That's the same concept here, is that when we eat a large meal, how much energy and how much of our blood flow goes to our stomach and our intestines to make sure that we absorb that. That portion of myths has been proven false over and over and over again. This one, however, looks at, okay, if you take that big bolus of calories in the morning, will you use them throughout the day, and will you decrease, unfortunately, what we see a lot in this world is intermittent snacking through the day, where we're eating high-calorie, bad foods through the day just because we have these cravings and we're hungry.
Yeah, I remember the old saying, have breakfast like a king and dinner like a pauper. Remember that?
That's exactly it, and that is, if you look at the United States, we're almost the exact opposite, right? Many people don't eat breakfast or eat a small breakfast or a quick breakfast on their way to the train. And then we have this large meal at night where it's more of a social meal around your family, but it's high in calories, high in fat, and it's your major meal. Look at European countries, it's almost the exact opposite. They move that major meal either to the breakfast time or to lunch, and then have a small meal at dinner, which is the wisest thing to do.
You know, you travel through Europe and you see all these people, and everybody seems to be skinny. And then you think, well, wait a minute. Is it because they're smoking? Is it because they're walking all the time? Or is it because they don't have the giant portions of foods? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we unfortunately have gotten to this world of everything needs to be supersized. You look at, go to McDonald's and look at the Big Mac supersized, and you're taking almost your entire day's calories just in that one meal right there. So, unfortunately, here in the States, we're not eating healthy, and we're eating too much. But like you said, in European countries, look at what they're doing, and the impact on their health has been dramatic, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Back with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer for Northwestern Medicine. Doc, let's talk about this study regarding calories. And I guess the way I understand it, the figures printed on nutrition labels may not be as precise as they seem. Explain this for us.
Yeah. You know, Bob, since 1973, the FDA said, hey, you know what, if we're going to give people food in packages, we really need to tell them what the nutritional value is of that. So we give them the breakdown, essentially. And everyone has seen these. They're on almost everything. Many people use them to count calories, and they look at those. The interesting thing was, when we first started with the FDA, it was solely based on weight. So if you had a gram of fat in this package, it was worth 9 calories. So take the number of grams of fat, multiply it by 9, that's how many calories you have. Same with protein. If you had a gram of protein, you multiplied it by 4, and that's how many grams of protein you had. The interesting thing is that as we've advanced, we have found that it's not that simple. It's not just weight, and that's what it's going to equal. And the reason being is that you probably heard of fiber, right? We want people to have a high fiber diet. If they have a high fiber diet, the decrease in colon cancer is dramatic. Look at people in Africa where colon cancer is non-existent. Look at us here where we have a lower fiber diet and we have increasing number of colon cancer. Well, what we have found is that some of the foods, as we process them, will either become more available to be absorbed or less available to be absorbed. So the study that you're talking about talked about almonds. So if we put almonds straight in and don't process them, then we find out that less is absorbed, higher in fiber, less calories. So now we know that science, and it's not as simple as just math.
So is this about digestion then? If you digest more of the food, then the calorie count is lower?
Absolutely. It's absorption, right? So we could take food. We take foods that are high in fiber. We really don't absorb them. They stay in our intestinal tract, and they allow for better colon health, I'll say. But others, like almonds, let's say we now take that almond. Instead of leaving it unprocessed, we process it. We roast it. Now we grind it, and we make it into almond butter, like peanut butter. That's going to be almost totally absorbed now. So now that number is going to be very exact. Here's how much it weighed. Here's what we did to it. Now it can all be absorbed. The ones that we don't process, that we don't do those things to, aren't totally absorbed, so it's not going to give you that high caloric impact, and yet it's still going to be healthy for you. So they're trying to make it a little bit more accurate than the old days of, here's what it is, here's how much it weighed, and here's what your caloric intake is going to be, when in fact, no, we know some of that is not going to be absorbed, so it shouldn't count against your calories and should give you a more accurate picture of what you're ingesting.
So the more accurate label on almonds, for example, would list, if you're having them raw, if you're having them right out of the bag, this is the calorie count. If you're having almond butter, this is the calorie count, and so forth and so on. It would be a more accurate label.
Exactly. Much more accurate.
The other story I want to get to is headlined Muscle Mass Linked to Heart Disease Risk. We've been talking a lot in February about heart health. And this study that was published recently looked at the importance of muscle mass and maintaining muscle mass as we age. And I think we all are well aware of the fact that it's important to have some weight workouts as you get older because you lose more muscles. But this study actually connected heart health a little bit more with that. What did it say?
Yeah, this is a very interesting study. This is the Attica study, which has been going on since the year 2000. And this was started in Greece. 3,000 people were enrolled, and they took 3,000 individuals, about 1,500 women, 1,500 men, that had no clinical evidence of heart disease at the time in 2000. Now, the interesting thing about this study is you're hearing today about muscle mass, but they've already looked at the impact of the Mediterranean diet on this. They've looked at the impact of secondhand smoke. They've looked at the impact of adipose tissue. They've looked at the impact of depression. And now they're coming out with a muscle mass. So what they've really done is they're trying to get a great picture of cardiovascular health as we age and what impacts it. So people say, oh, well, it's interesting, the muscle mass. No, they have to understand the Attica study has looked at a whole bunch of things because they had this great population that had no cardiovascular disease at 2000. Now they looked at 2010. Now they're looking at the same group of individuals in 2020. So it's fascinating.
The Attica study, I mean, this is a large study over a long period of time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. So they're looking at now, each of the different scientists and researchers are looking at, okay, I want to look and see what the impact of this is. And they're looking at these small subsets. And the subset you're talking about was muscle mass. So they showed that the individuals who had a large muscle mass in their 30s and then progressed, if they kept that muscle mass and maintained that muscle mass, they had an 81% decreased chance of cardiovascular disease. Pretty substantial when you hear those numbers. And people say, well, wait a second, that's a kind of group that we know they're going to exercise, they're not going to smoke. The researchers actually balanced that out and took all of those into consideration before coming up with their determination.
So another reason to not just do cardio as part of your exercise routine.
Absolutely. You know, cardio, great to stress your heart, but it certainly is showing that muscle mass is going to have a huge impact on cardiovascular disease. The study is very well done, and it's very well touted throughout the industry when you look at it. And actually, it was one of the biggest things that really started to push this Mediterranean diet, probably one of the more healthy, famous diets that are out there. Because when we look at cardiovascular illnesses around the Mediterranean, whether it be in Greece or Italy, the number of cardiovascular illnesses is dramatically lower than it is in the United States. And why? Because they live on a diet of fish and vegetables and fruit and nuts and beans and olive oil and, you know, chicken every so often. But rarely do they have red meat, which is almost the opposite of what you see here in this country.
And before we let you go, Doc, I know you heard the news this morning, the fears of a coronavirus pandemic growing, sharp rises in new cases in Iran, Italy, and South Korea, although China has relaxed restrictions on movements in several places, including Beijing. Their rates of new infections have eased. What does this say to you, Doc, about what's going to happen here in the next few months with the coronavirus?
Yeah, it's very very concerning. If you look at the cases here in the United States, and I think we're at 40, 45, close to 50, whatever it is, what we've done is we fortunately have an infrastructure here that when we find somebody, we isolate that person, we put them in the hospital, not because they need to be in the hospital, but because we don't want it to spread. As you're starting to get out into countries where they don't have that infrastructure, you're going to start to see more spread. And unfortunately, once that hits a crescendo, it's going to be very difficult to stop. So I think that this is going to be with us for a while now. And I'm not sure we're getting the true story out of China, which is unfortunate. If you look back from when we had the first case in January, or late December, I guess, they've changed how they count the number of cases seven different ways. Mm-hmm. So if you remember the one day we had 800 cases, the next day we had 14,000. Well, they changed the classification. And you're going to start to see that the impact of this across all the countries where they don't have the infrastructure to isolate people is going to allow for this to spread.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern. Doc, thanks as always for cutting through the health information weeds for us. We look forward to our visit with you again next Monday morning.
You got it, Bob. Take care.
You too. Have a good day.